Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 76. Well, it finally happened. Traveling work and scheduling made it impossible to record a hostful podcast this week. However, I am super excited with the episode that we're putting up because Jenny Jardine is a good friend of mine, one of the smartest people I know, and one of the overlords at Boing Boing. So I'm glad that actually we were able to finally get her on. We will resume with our hostful podcast next week. In the meantime, here's a couple shows to look out for. April 15th through 17th, I'll be at the Irvine Improv telling jokes. May 2nd, we're doing the Nerdist Podcast live at Nerdist at Meltdown with Kevin Pereira. May 6th, stand up at the Varsity Theater in Minneapolis. May 20th, Littlefield in Brooklyn. June 4th, Showbox in Seattle. And then June 10th, The Magic Bag in Detroit. Information for all these shows are, of course, at Nerdist.com. If you're interested in joining our Node Warrior Street Team promotions for any of these cities, just shoot an email over to warriors@Nerdist.com and make the subject line be, "Pick me in," and then you insert your city. It's just that simple. Also, huge thanks to Rolling Stone for making the Nerdist Podcast one of the top 10 podcasts you should listen to. I guess that's not even a humble brag. That's just kind of a brag. But we're all super excited about it, so thank you very much to them, and thanks to you for continuing to make us relevant. And now here we go, Nerdist Podcast number 76 with Jenny Jardine.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Personal audio.
I always wanted to do that. Just hit the cough button and then cough. Do you feel like you've achieved this?
That was really something for me. I don't even.
This is very exciting. We're recording now. We're in a snazzy radio station esque facility here at friggin'
guys. Look, chairs are going by.
We're in what could have been a snazzy corner office.
Chairs going by.
Shares going by?
No, shoot. It's chairs.
They look the same. Chairs. Let's be honest.
Really, what's the difference between share and chair?
They've both been rebuilt by using sophisticated synthetic materials.
Chairs really do believe in life after love. They do.
After love, after love, after love, after love. Jenny Jardine.
Chris Hardwick.
I am so thrilled that you are finally on the podcast. We met years ago on the set of the Wired Science program.
That's exactly right.
Through our mutual friend Melanie Cornwell.
We did.
And
it was great show. You did a great job on that show.
It was so much fun.
I miss it.
I miss it too.
It was like, it was fun, but it was science and technology. It was high IQ fun.
It really was. It was good nerd porn.
The
Wired Science. They kind of just replaced it with Nova Science now.
Did they? Well, you know, when we did Wired Science, PBS had not done a new original series in like 5 years something crazy like that.
It's
true. Like you got replaced by Neil deGrasse Tyson.
It's a bad thing.
It is not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing at all. Yeah, that was such a fun show. We had so many great, nerdy fights. Elon Musk was on the show, and all sorts of. I get to interview Craig Venter, which was incredible, and
I purchased those on iTunes.
But
the Wired Science television shows.
You did?
I did.
You were the guy.
That was me.
You were the...
I would like my $6 back.
All right. But, well, let's just try to get you paid for this podcast first, then I'll get you $6.
Wait, wait, wait. We get paid?
No. Please,
no,
I hear that all the time.
Paid.
We don't.
Ever.
I was just, you know, counting on the souvenir water.
It'll take the fun out.
We'll sign your water.
No, you're supposed to open it. You broke the seal. Oh, it's not worth anything anymore. You broke the seal. So what have you been up to lately? You seem like you travel a lot, Jenny. Is your microphone being weird?
Yes.
We just found the major drawback to the studio that the one microphone is just fails.
Well, I'm hoping that pouring water all over the controls will help that.
Listen, guys, we're at the E building. You know, it's these microphones just cannot keep up with the Kardashians. Okay, that's the problem with these microphones.
I'm going to fondle my mic during the entire podcast. You might see
my mic smells of Seacrest.
It does.
Which is also the name of his cologne.
Thank you. That's where we were going. Yeah.
So when I'm driving over here from the luxurious Boing Boing TV offices earlier today, I pass a billboard with Eva Longoria and her signature perfume on it.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, why is it that we want to smell like celebrities?
Well, here's
like, really, what's up with that? Like, why would I want to? I mean, Eva Longoria in particular.
Let's start with the Paris Hilton fragrance, and then we'll work our way up to Eva Longoria.
I think I would be more apt to try and see what it smelled like if it actually smelled like the celebrity.
Right.
It's like, that's the weird thing. It's
Antonio Banderas is called Secret.
Like Secrets.
Cocaine and burnt dreams.
Exactly. It's like, the thing is, it's like, this isn't what they smell like. This is like the thing they thought, like, you know, when the person at the perfume place was like, did you like this? Or like, yeah, put my name on it.
Yeah, but with Antonio Banderas, it should have been Nasonex, right?
Nasonex.
They should have put in a cologne that also opens up your nose.
That's very good.
If you're having asthma,
Nasonex and sex.
Yes,
Nasonex.
His secret is how he still finds Melanie Griffith attractive.
Come on, man! What are you doing over there?
No.
The claws are out today, and this kitty needs to scratch.
It is proper conversation for the E building, though.
Really,
it really is.
I feel like my IQ just dropped walking through the threshold.
That's what happens in the lobby. There's a which looks very similar to the lobby that gets shot up in the Matrix. There is a triangulation of devices that will inhibit your higher brain functions.
Toto, we're not an NPR anymore.
Also, outside they had a scene from Demolition Man.
Yes, that built outside the exterior.
Oh
here.
Yeah, that's right. It was Demolition Man. I think NPR E would be a good mashup. Oh, the Kardashians today are going for a shopping trip. Oh, look what Chloe's purchased, a new pair of shoes. Let's go home and talk to the robot that looks like someone tried to build a Bruce Jenner lookalike.
Good evening, I'm Linda Wertheimer, and today, the dying language of Paris Hilton, followed by Peaches with Ryan Seacrest.
I'm Alyssa Montour. Coming up next, we see the celebrities at their worst. Look at that bag.
Today, we are wild on Ibiza.
With Robert Siegel.
I think the NPR E mashup needs to happen.
Morning becomes hungover.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I love it. I love it. This is exactly the kind of stuff... Boy, if only you had a website that would aggregate some of the best things on the internet. And I want to talk a little bit about Boing Boing, because Boing Boing is probably... Boing Boing has been for years a go-to name, a staple.
People go to it.
Of web culture. And I think, you know, I think you guys essentially helped really drive this idea of sharing and aggregation and you know, the nerd community. I mean, you guys were on the forefront of that. So how did it all come about, and how, you know, were you involved from day one, and how did that play out?
Boing Boing actually began as a print zine in the 80s. I was not involved then, but Mark Frauenfelder and his wife Carla Sinclair, who were Wired alums, they were involved in the early days of the print magazine.
Mm-hmm.
They just did this crazy zine about nerd culture before people even said nerd culture. Back when it was like cyberpunk. And it's funny, though, like going back to the early issues of the zine, it was sort of poorly printed, you know, with Bruce Sterling and weird crap from William Gibson and little stuff where you could mail away a self-addressed stamped envelope and get back like secrets of teleportation. It's just like the ads are actually not that different from the ads we run now.
That's great.
But, and like the content is not that different. It's so cool looking through those. But at any rate, eventually the zine became a website in 2000 when the cost of printing the zine became prohibitive for them. I joined, I think it was like 2002, 2003, as a guest blogger, and they just never kicked me off. And, you know, I should say, too, like back then in the early days, you know, both with the zine and then also with the early days of the website, it really was a labor of love. And when Boing Boing first experienced its first burst of popularity and the server went crazy and we had like a crappy hosting deal where you know, we're overcharged exorbitantly when you hit that cap of of traffic.
It's like an AT&T data plan.
Like an AT&T data plan. I remember there was one month where we had to pay $1,000 out of pocket, each of us, to keep the site going. And we would all have to like pass around the hat every month to keep Boing Boing alive. So we actually paid to produce Boing Boing for some time. And then we reached out to our friend John Battelle, another guy from the early days of Wired, and said, you know, do you think you could sell a few ads just to offset the hosting costs? Maybe then we could keep doing this thing that we love. And it turned out that there was enough money out there eventually for that to become the center of our lives in some ways.
Now, was that when Justin Timberlake came in and said, you need to drop the on the Boing Boing? And then there was a crazy montage of you guys getting blowjobs in bathrooms?
Yes.
I figured that's what it was.
The name Boing Boing came from all the sex they were getting.
Tons of internet
all the sex.
People always try to figure out where the name Boing Boing came from. And some of the most popular theories include there was a cartoon character, I guess, in like the 50s or something.
Gerald McBoing Boing.
And then there's also a porn star in Brazil named Sabrina Boing Boing. Google it.
Wow.
Gigantic gazongas.
Well, you would have to if that's your surname.
Indeed. And the truth is, at least the truth as told by Mark Frauenfelder, is that it's the sound that a happy mutant makes hopping through the world on a pogo stick. Boing, 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 boinging through the world and finding interesting and wonderful and disturbing and creepy, interesting and real things.
I love the thing that you said before about, you know, they were reporting on nerd culture before nerd culture was really a thing that people even said, because I get asked that all the time. They're like, well, you know, I had a big nerd geek debate with Chris Anderson from Wired, and I said, look, We didn't label ourselves really until the movie Revenge of the Nerds came out, and that word was in our regional vernacular. We didn't really use the word geek back then. There was no ironic nerd. There was no hipster nerd. It just, you were just into things that were not what the popular kids were into.
Even irony and hipster. Hipster were bohemians, and irony was, I don't know, Baudelaire.
We didn't have irony back. Irony didn't really hit our cultural until sometime in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. Then we started getting ironic about, like, oh, remember how bad this thing was? Yeah. Wouldn't it be awesome if we did this bad thing all the time?
That's when pop culture started folding in on itself and just becoming this little mass of just references.
It's gonna burn out, though. Patton Oswalt wrote a great article in you didn't like it?
You know what? I read it and it had a lot of good points. His whole article about how geek culture needs to die. Mm. And to me, it sounds like an old man angry that all the stuff he liked as a kid is now in the mainstream. What he doesn't understand is that there is new stuff being born every day that he doesn't know about, that other kids do and the younger people do. And it doesn't need to die. His is dead. Maybe his is dead and needs to die. But there is another geek culture. It will always be, you know, the underground culture.
Well, maybe spent too much time in that French kitchen. I thought Ratatouille was a documentary.
Exactly. When he was turned into. But I don't think it needs to die. I think the geek culture he's talking about, you know, Dungeons and Dragons and, you know, late '80s, early '90s indie rock and stuff like that. It's enough time has passed to where that is the mainstream. But what about the stuff that was born in, like, you know, in the past decade?
You know, I agree with what you're saying. I guess what I took out of it was something that I agree with, which there is so much of our entertainment culture right now is basically just mashing up, rehashing, remixing, remaking, retooling old stuff, that it just feels like, hey, what if we just started writing original things instead of having to go to, let's do this NPR e-mashup.
Yeah, you know,
fuck, they already did it. God damn it.
Yeah, and like all the things they make where it's just a bunch of movie parts all in a row. And they finally gave that a name too. They're calling them supercuts now, where they just, like, you know, every time.
Gotta be the hair.
And then there's, you know, Fantastic Sam's, where they just a bunch of awesome sandwiches in a row.
You know, can I tell you a little story once? And one time I was in the Valley and I was going to a...
there's a guy looking in the window.
Don't look.
He's checking you out.
Funny.
He is checking you out.
He's checking out your ass, Chris.
Yeah. Hey, is that machete? Us. That's machete.
Oh. Yeah, he done fucked with the wrong Mexican.
He don't text. He don't.
He don't. I was going to a... I was going to this... to get some food in the Valley in this little plaza, and there's a Supercuts there, and as I walked by the window, I looked at Supercuts and I could see my reflection, and in my reflection I saw the word Supercuts, and then just jokingly I looked at myself and nodded and went, gotta be the hair. Then then I noticed that there were people inside watching and people walking by, and I couldn't, like, when you do something like that, how do you explain to a crowd of people, like,
I was tweeting in my brain.
Yeah. No, you don't understand. I was being ironic that we didn't learn until the 90s.
Yeah, you had to be there in my brain when I said that.
I think there were a handful of people that were like, I think that guy thinks his hair is the root of whatever minor success he might have in this life. It's got to be the hair.
It's got to be.
You always have great hair. The last time I saw you, your hair was a lot shorter, but yeah, it's awesome.
It grew.
I love it. Wait, I don't understand.
So
you don't just get one length forever?
Well, in the earlier Nexus 6 models, this was the case. I returned to the Tyrell Labs recently, and they upgraded the hair.
They did? Well, you must only have you must not have that much time. What do you get? 3 years?
I've got about 6 years left.
You do?
Yeah.
Maybe I should do the Voight-Kampff test on myself. I might be a replicant.
It's too bad you can't live forever, but then who does? This whole podcast is a Voight-Kampff test to see if you're funny. Or a lesbian.
That's a game show. Funny or lesbian?
That's a website.
Funny or lesbian. Like Face Mash.
I like how that's like they have to be mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
Well, she can't be funny. She's a lesbian.
No,
my brain.
She can't be a lesbian. She's funny.
Wow.
That seems weird.
The debate for the ages, Chris.
I know. The debate for the ages. What was your nerd landscape like when you were growing up?
My father was a Trekkie.
Nice.
He built his own 3D cameras. He mixed his own paints. He was a painter. And he painted nude women. My house was filled with nude women as a child.
Nice. And they were modeling at your house?
They were modeling at my house, yes.
Wow.
He painted photorealistic nudes. We were isolated because we were in sort of a conservative community that had no idea what the fuck was going on in our house. But you know, and they were like nude women frolicking around in the yard, and he's painting them. And as a result, I think, you know, my family, it was like we had this nude women bubble around us. And I spent a lot of time reading books and tinkering with machines and playing with unicorns.
That's fantastic. Did you go to a regular school, or were you homeschooled, or?
I went to a regular school and had turbulent teen years and ended up out here on the West Coast going to art school for a year and then flunking out. Well, not flunking out, but dropping out. And wanting very, very badly to be a journalist and to learn about computers and to do art all at the same time. And everybody was telling me as a teenager that you can't do all those things at the same time. It's like you can either write or you can fuck around with code, or you can paint, but you can't do all three. And it's beautiful how the future works, because now, like, that's what Boing Boing is, kind of.
Well, I think I think the new creative model is you kind of need to do all that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Don't you? It's good to diversify, and it's good to, you know, I'm going to code nude women. you can just combine all those things.
I'm going to write about my ASCII portraits of naked ladies.
I have been trying for the longest time to make good ASCII pictures, and I always just revert to like, I'll just process it on a website. I'm no good at it.
The hand-coded ones are always more beautiful than the ones you run through the ASCII generators.
I know, it's true. It's true, but yeah.
It's hard to get the serifs right.
It is an art. Like, yes. You could just spend a lot of your time learning how to just do that.
It is.
And then it would be fine. I mean, it's basically because I want to try to come up with as many creative ways to text wieners to my girlfriend. So
who's wieners?
Whatever. I want her to see what's out there. You need to see what's out there.
Yes.
These are some other text wieners that you need to see.
That's a good put down to call someone a text wiener.
You're a text wiener.
That's like today I was talking with my friends on the internet about the Russian hash-smoking hippies that swing babies by their ankles.
Yes.
And my friend said, I'm going to try to work in that phrase to conversations today. Like, that's more fun, or that's more disorienting than swinging a baby by his ankles in an Egyptian hash town.
Sometimes we try to work in weird words into Genius Bar appointments when we're...
So you're just out in the open about what you do now?
Whatever.
Okay.
Don't care.
Don't judge.
You used to say, like, well, maybe I shouldn't mention
whatever.
That.
Yeah, whatever. You know, okay. Whatever. But we would just try to work in, we'd give each other words, like Tyrannosaurus. Or things that shouldn't be, like isolity or chips from Star Trek.
Yes.
We used to do that on NPR when I was a regular contributor.
Note
the use of past tense.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, yeah, what happened?
Oh, well, the show that I was a weekly contributor to was sacked. Mm-hmm. And there's a diaspora, and many of the producers and correspondents and hosts have now moved on to other shows. One of them, Madeline Brand, now has a great show here on KPCC, the Madeline Brand Show. And I'm doing regular stuff for them, sort of, now.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
You got a great voice.
Oh, thanks.
I enjoy your voice.
But you know how it's like, it's fun and it's neat when people that you really, really enjoyed working with in one venue find their way to another venue and there's a chance to reconnect again.
Yeah.
I love that.
Well, and also just the fact that so many, you know, so much of entertainment news, all the things that are out there are so complementary.
They are.
To each other. But you can still have different experiences, whether you're listening to an NPR show or watching Boing Boing TV or listening to a podcast or whatever. Like, everything can really kind of fit together nicely and not cannibalize everything else.
And things, it seems like things are more porous these days, you know? Somebody who has a TV show, somebody has a website, somebody who has a radio show. It's like stories can exist in these different media simultaneously and in different ways, and we like have different conversations in each of those. I dig it. I like my life.
And where do you think everything's going? Do you think Google TV is going to change? Because we were talking about this to Kevin Pollak, and you know, who does his video podcast, and
it's a great show,
really great show. But if you know if your Google TV can pull in web videos, those are basically just TV shows at that point. Do you agree with that, or do you still think that there is a line of demarcation? Because TV has a little bit more of a royal. TV looks down on the internet the way film looks down on TV.
Yeah, yeah. Look, only a fool tries to forecast the future, and I will attempt not to be a fool. But I think just as I don't know, like 5 years ago or so, I thought that like the pinnacle of my career would be to get a job on a cable news show, right? Mm-hmm. That maybe Boing Boing, and the trajectory of everything I did online was reaching up to that. And, you know, somewhere along the line, I realized that like not only might we have more views on Boing Boing in a given day than any number of TV shows, but that this is my home and it's legit and it's fine. And like cable news is great. But the sort of sense of legitimacy and power and pride that is afforded to one medium doesn't necessarily always last.
And truthfully, you're probably getting more unique eyes on your content on Point Blank.
It's all about the eyeballs.
Than most television shows.
It's all about the eyeballs, baby.
It really is about the eyeballs. So you set out and launched Boing Boing TV.
So with my partners, Mark Fraunfelder, David Peskovitz, Cory Doctorow.
It was just you when I just like cut everyone else
well,
out.
No, I mean, like, so every new project that we do at Boing Boing, like, somebody has to own it.
Yeah.
So I ended up owning the video project as the person who has to get up every day and, you know, nurse the baby and put it to bed at night. But we all contributed and we all continue to contribute. So it began as a 5 day a week thing, a 5 episode a week thing. And it's hard to do that. It's really hard to do that on the internet when you don't have a big staff and you know, buildings and assistants and people washing your car.
Yeah.
We didn't have that.
It's like watching a cooking show. Like, yes, of course your cooking show is easy because you have 4 chefs that are preparing and putting everything into little dishes and setting it out before you. So your final product was a breeze because you just came in at the end
and
after the work.
And your counters are clean.
Spotless.
Yes, yeah. But I have news for the world. DIY is hard.
it's hard, and it's especially hard consistently. I mean, that's one thing that, you know, like we've struggled with that with this show. It's like it's a DIY project. And we do it, and that's it.
Except for the person running around cleaning the tables here.
They're cleaning the tables, yeah. Well, yeah, that was the
cutting
the
carrots.
And the onions. Yeah, we try to stay away from the onions. We get all teary.
Yeah.
I'm getting teary now.
That's only because they make me sad. An onion killed my grandfather.
Whoa.
So we moved from doing a 5-episode-a-week thing to what we do now, which is more intermittent, and when we really feel like something has to be done. So we'll do like a few episodes a month, and we have this, if you fly Virgin America, you can watch Boing Boing Video for your whole flight. It's like they stuck us on Virgin America as if we were a real TV network. We're in between, you know, CNN and Fox.
I quite enjoy Virgin America, and they're not paying me anything, and I'm not getting anything from them.
They're not paying us either.
But I love flying Virgin America. It's just a nice experience.
It is. But like Boing Boing is as legitimate as an actual TV, another TV station that's on Virgin America, which is Current TV.
Yes.
You know, it's like. Most anytime anyone ever sees Current TV,
yeah.
I worked on a bunch of shows on that network, and the only time anyone ever saw it was when they were on a Virgin America flight. And
really?
I mean, yeah, and so it's like if you have that in your head, then all of a sudden Boing Boing TV is as legitimate as a broadcast station.
Yeah, it's a blast putting it together too. So like every month, you know, I'll work with my colleagues and some other people that I reach out to for input. We just put together, you know, like a 2 or 3 hour playlist of stuff that we've produced. So, you know, interviews with the Mighty Boosh or flying in zero gravity with an astronaut or going to the bottom of the sea with some scientist. We mix that in with like crazy, interesting animations, music videos, short films. And some of that, what I love about it is that some of it is stuff that you could never get somebody to sit still long enough to watch on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Like 1 month we ran the entire... like hour-long Decemberists animated video, Here Come the Wave, The Hazards of Love. It was like their album visualized as this trippy, psychedelic animated film.
Mm-hmm.
You could never do that on the internet, but when you have a captive audience, literally captive, on a plane, 30,000 feet above the earth, you can, and they dig it.
That's great.
So it's not a money-making thing for us right now. We've just treated it like an experiment. And the ads that we run, I can just, you know, reach out to small arts organizations or nonprofits. So it's like, let's do an ad for WikiLeaks.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have an ad for the ACLU or the EFF.
Do they pay you for that, or you just run it because you guys want to?
You know, up till now, it's just been an experiment. And I like the beautiful freedom of Boing Boing is that we're a small and nimble enough organization that we can experiment with things up to a point without having to worry about if it's going to turn a profit. So this is one of those things where we sort of do it for the lulz, and maybe eventually it will.
I totally understand that. And I feel like especially, you know, so much of that, so much of the stuff is like, well, I do want it. I want to commercialize it, but just, you know, at least just to the extent where we can just keep the lights on. Mm-hmm. As long as we can keep the lights on and we can keep putting information out there, you know, everything will be like, it's fine. We don't need to make gazillions of dollars from that. You have a cough button now, Jonah.
Oh, yeah. I can.
We have professional microphones.
I just used mine.
I'll just hold in my sneeze so it destroys my nasal.
Why are your eyes bleeding?
No, keep on talking about technology.
Matthew, go. You're in the number two spot.
Oh,
You've been training for this?
Yes, it was only a matter of time.
Get
I'll
surly.
His eyes bleed out. I will grow angrier.
Wait, let me Instagram that.
Well, one of the things that I love about you is you really do just pursue the things that really interest you.
It's true.
Genuinely. Like, I follow you on Twitter, and you you travel quite a bit.
I do.
Were you in Africa last year?
Yes, and I will probably return this year. I do a lot of international travel to obscure places. I'm working on a book. I'm working on some other things that that this, you know, is part of. But like, the beautiful thing about a life where Boing Boing is the center is that whatever interesting stuff you explore out in the world sort of folds back into that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm in Benin, a country in West Africa between Togo and Nigeria.
None of those things exist.
And, you know, like, having some interesting and heavy experiences exploring stuff that might not be native to Boing Boing.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, we're driving down this highway in like the northern highlands of Benin, and I see a coffin lashed to the back of a pickup truck that's in the shape of an Incredible Hulk lunchbox.
Oh,
what?
My God.
And
what?
Like, so in West Africa, I think particularly in Benin and Nigeria and Ghana, it's a sort of a tradition that when you die, you can hire a sculptor to carve and paint a coffin in the image of that which you loved most or that which you did most. So, Chris Hardwick, yours might be, you know, a microphone, a camera, an iPad, perchance.
It could be. It could be any one of those things.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't there somewhere in South America?
Or a Steve Martin with an arrow through the head. That would probably be my coffin.
There was someone in South America that died in a motorcycle accident, and then he, in his will, he wanted to be basically stuffed in his form on to his motorcycle.
That was Puerto Rico.
Was that Puerto Rico?
Yeah, that same funeral home. They did another guy standing up. Very odd stuff that you can't really. Oh, sorry, that you can't really do in America.
Yeah. Matt used to work at a funeral home, so he knows all the funeral home.
Don't worry.
He knows all the funeral home biz.
So do they stuff them? Do they use the technology from Body Works?
That's the that's plastination.
Plastination.
Boy, by the way, in Vegas they have the knockoff of Body Worlds.
Really.
Which you just know are like, these are people that just like died behind Caesars, and they just cut them open.
Body Wally Worlds.
Sorry, Body Wally Worlds is closed. Dead moose out front should have told you.
The nervous system of a moose outside should have told you.
Body Works is weird. That was very off putting to me.
Body Worlds is the legit one. Body Works is
body,
the all right, and I'm not going to be. I don't mean to be slanderous. I'm sure that it's a very professional operation at Body Works in Las Vegas, but it just feels a little more like something about the context of Las Vegas with, you know, exploded muscular systems.
Well, no, I mean, like, I had just, like, there was a autopsy person that we had embalmed the day before.
An autopsy person?
Wait,
person
you actually,
who had been autopsied.
You actually worked at a funeral home?
He really did.
Yeah.
No, I thought that was a gag.
No. And when he goes home to Boston, like on the holidays, he goes in and helps out.
Still You're
goes,
kidding.
I bring my suit just in case they need me to suit up and help out.
Whoa.
So, but anyway, no, like, they're, like, that's as pretty as gnarly as it gets when you have either an organ donor or someone who had an autopsy. So, like, yeah, I got the chest cavity with a bag of organs in it, whatever. And that's fine. The
like
next
a turkey
day, I went
with
to
giblets.
I went to the Museum of Science the next day to see the touring Body World thing, and I was nauseous the whole time. Something about the plasticine people made me nauseous, but real.
Really? You've real seen bodies fall apart.
Yes.
You've been standing in people goo.
Yeah. And yet plastic versions of people?
Well, it's not plastic versions. It's real people.
Well, no, they've been plasticized, so it's a plastic person.
Okay. Do you think maybe it's because you're in your work mode, you're in your work brain when you're working?
I don't know.
And you were just relaxed with your defenses down?
It was off-putting to me for some reason. It was like, ugh, I felt gross.
Well, because there are things that you really shouldn't do with the human body. Like, you really...
You shouldn't fillet me and put me on a filleted horse?
Exactly. Like, yeah. That thing, you shouldn't have an exploded giraffe.
I mean, it's interesting.
Can I reveal too much about myself
please,
for a moment?
Please, please.
I once went on a first date to Body Worlds.
Oh. Really?
How did it go?
It actually went really well.
Did it get weird with the big naked dude?
Yes.
Part.
Yes.
Or did it get weird with naked ladies with no skin, and the guy's like, "I'd like to do that to you." What?
Yeah.
Which this part? Date is over.
Yeah. It is really there's that one part though where it's really dark and it's just the nervous systems that kind of just that's my favorite part.
I'm having PTSD right now.
But that, you know, it's like in that room it's really dark and just the red glowing nervous system,
yeah,
and it's really
insane.
Cold in that room. That's romantic.
The veins and the arteries.
Yeah,
and
that part. Not the, you know, flesh part, but just the
I am so turned on right now.
I love that at the end of it, they have that sign-up sheet to donate your fucking body.
No, yeah. Definitely not.
You know, I'm
they do.
To the guy who looks like the German guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I know you.
I'm going to donate my body.
I know you will.
Right this way. I'm surprised there hasn't been a horror movie that has been based around that exhibit, you know?
What if there were, a human centipede in his exhibit? Wouldn't that be great?
That'd be great.
You know he's got that shit in his private collection. You know he's got that shit in
a
his basement.
A first date with him.
Yes.
How would that be?
Oh, my God.
So what do you
your
do?
Your skin is very elastic.
Yeah.
I'm a doctor.
I always just wonder, because, I feel like at the time I went to Body Worlds, there were people who were just staring far too long at the opened vaginas.
And they weren't 12.
No. Oh, that's what that shit looks like in there. Like, it just seems, it was just slightly off-putting.
That's
just
what you say
guys.
Every time. That's what that's like.
That's
what
like walking like. Through.
Doesn't he go to a Body Worlds exhibit in Casino Royale? Doesn't he do
Does
that?
He?
Yeah. Right?
Oh, I can't remember now. It's been so...
I can't remember Quantum of Solace. That movie is completely forgettable, and
walking,
it bums me out. I don't remember a plot of that at
Body
all.
Body Worlds is like a stroll through B. there's beautiful things there, but it's kind of fucked up.
It's a little... To get to that place was a little fucked up.
Yeah, you don't want to know who they were. I don't like it when they're just like, this was an athlete. I don't want to know what he did.
This guy's favorite food was tacos. Yeah. That's too personal.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like the
For
idea.
My band.
What is this like? I mean, is there like their family members? Do they know where they are? Which ones? It's like, let's go check out dad. And then they go and there's just a naked
no,
dad.
No, I don't think they know.
Yeah.
You are cordially invited to see your
father
on display.
Is it awake? Sort of awake. I remember when I was in college and I took a kinesiology class, and then we had to identify and toy around with sected limbs, and when you're looking at just exposed musculature, it didn't register to me like this is people, but it wasn't until you would see where they had cut around the tips of the fingers and you just saw a little bit of fingernail and just a little bit of the fingernail skin, the fingerprint, that was the stuff where you were like I don't feel good. That's when that happens. And then I took a girl to it on a date. That's not true, but Janet and I did go. Janet and I went to Body Worlds. She loved
Oh, really?
It. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, does gross stuff and gore?
Fucked behind the horse. It was so hot.
I can't go to horror movies. I have,
oh, really?
I have, my brain has a gag reflex.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I hate gore and horror, and even, if you talk to me about... having a splinter.
Is that no good?
Yeah, blood I'm super squeamish.
Yeah, blood and even just...
A stub toe. I can handle a stub toe, and I can handle blood under some circumstances, but going through... I really can't watch horror movies.
What about a thriller like Fatal Attraction?
Okay.
That one's okay?
Yeah, there's sex in that.
Where's the correlation between the two?
Well, it's kind of a horror movie.
It's suspense.
Like body brutality going on.
Yeah, so you can't watch like a zombie movie. You can't watch
a funny zombie movie, yeah.
None of the Saw movies.
No, never.
Lord of Illusions.
I haven't seen it yet.
Faces of Death.
No.
Well, those are...
Everyone, Faces of Death was the internet before the internet.
Yeah, yeah. It was true. It was Rotten.com before Rotten.
Rotten.com was the worst.
Yeah, I can't ever go on there.
This is to reveal too much about myself, which I've done too much in the past. Rotten.com was, I used that site to, you know, when you're an adolescent kid growing up, you get a lot of like boners. Just out of nowhere for no real particular reason.
And right, Jenny?
And you have
right?
to. And you know,
who's with me?
You have to deal with it.
Funny or lesbian?
No, but it's something you have to deal with as an adolescent boy in school. And then, like, when you're watching the clock count down to the end of class and it's still there, I used Rotten.com images that I stored in my brain as ways to try and stop the erection.
It's like
before.
A guided meditation.
It was. It really was. It was like, you know. It was a tool that I used. It was a horrible site.
It could be a tagline. Rotten.com. We stop the erection.
Bye bye, boners. Rotten.com.
Don't get lost. Don't get lost in that matrix or you will never get one again.
Yeah.
But what if the boner got more intense? Would that have
that would have been
the sort of
like I found all kinds of new things about myself.
It's like your dog coming joke that you told
What if that was the thing? Yeah.
Jonah had a joke that he told. We did a stand up only special where it was just all comedy and Jonah told a story about it's even gross to retell it.
Yeah, it's a gross thing. Most of the stuff was gross.
Can you see my grimace?
Yeah. No, it's just
Jonah was having a Jonah was having a pleasure moment alone and some dog puppies ran in.
Like all my three dogs ran
right,
in.
Right at the right at the exact moment of completion.
Yeah.
And he had to kick them away as that was happening, and then he had this moment where he was like, "Now what if that's how I found out? Like that's how fetishes are born. What if that, you know, like
yeah, like what if just an accident that happened when you were having sex or when you're, you know, pleasuring yourself? What if like, and then you're like, oh,
that's
oh, no, really, me?
Did you ever see the stuff that that Matt Stone and Trey Parker did the series of shorts, Princess?
No,
they're pretty.
I've never
seen
it.
They're online. It's basically. It's about this little Shih Tzu, I guess, named Princess.
Shih Tzu's already funny.
True. But then, of course, the rest of the thing has nothing to do with the dog. So I don't want to spoil it, but
Don't spoil dogs and sex for us,
no,
Chris.
No. I don't want to take that away from anyone. I don't want to.
Precious.
I don't want to re-gift that. But yeah, it's called Princess, and it's way more disturbing than stuff from South Park. And I always thought it was awesome.
Yeah. Princess.
That's the theme song.
Is it online?
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta see that.
Yeah. But there's a part where something happens that makes the guy ejaculate really hard, and it's a... I just don't want to spoil it.
I was taken by surprise.
I was at a dinner party last night with hackers and a well-known animator and animated film director. And towards the end of the night, the film director was sharing with us... something that he found funny that day. And the thing that he found funny was an animated film, like an animated short that has never seen the light of day, that's just in circulation among animators, that was all about sex. It was like this dirty, funny sex animation where like eight different directors or animators each contributed parts to it. And then a well-known man who does scores for films did this funny soundtrack that was all like... It actually wasn't Hans Zimmer, but that would have been funnier. But it was all like icky, squishy sex sounds and then like groaning women and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that the story was retold made it so funny.
Was it Brad Bird?
No.
I just think animation and sex, I think John Kay being a weirdo.
But so apparently this one of the other people at the party said, "This has got to be online. I'm going to Google the title now." And he said, nope. But it exists, and it's on a USB thumb drive somewhere.
That's the holy the holy grail
The fact that some fantastic things, digital things, even this is a digital thing, exist but not online.
We're at a point where we can barely even fathom that something isn't online. Like someone asked me recently, like, oh, where can I see old Shipmates episodes, which was a silly dating show I hosted. And I'm like, I don't know. And they go, it's online, right? And I go, nope, I don't think it is. Yeah. And they could not process the idea that there was something that happened in our culture that was not buried online somewhere.
Not even on a BitTorrent hub in Romania.
Not even there. Not even there.
Are you sure about that?
No. I'm not sure. But I want to see, now I want to see this animated thing that's circulating.
If I can obtain a copy, I can promise you that it will either be on the Romanian BitTorrent hub or it will be on Boing Boing.
Will our faces melt? It's beautiful!
Oh, keep your eyes shut.
I'm fixated on Raiders today for some reason.
Hmm.
How do we acquire this gorgeous piece of?
I don't know. I'm gonna, as soon as I can get the hell out of here, I'm gonna go start.
Are you gonna boing boing it, or you're gonna keep it? You're gonna keep it private.
I try to respect people's requests for how widely they want something distributed. So if I had permission, I'd absolutely throw it up on Boing Boing. But you know, it's funny, the reactions that happen to things and to people and ideas on Boing Boing are not always positive. There's one friend of ours who's always finding and doing interesting things. We published this hilarious thing he did. He made a business card that was just the drollest, funniest business card that ever did happen. And we did a post, and the comments, there were like 500 comments about how much he sucked, and the idea sucked, and the business card sucked. And that very day, he wrote us. And he's a personal friend of some of ours. He said, please don't ever mention me on Boing Boing ever again.
Oh.
I love you, but I don't need that in my life.
Yeah.
And there's some days, honestly, where I feel like that, too.
Well, you mean, because you guys were pulling in, like you said, nerd culture before it was really a thing. So you've really seen, you've probably been, you've been party to nerd rage more than most people in comment threads. And I remember when I came and checked out your facility, probably like 3 or 4 years ago, and you were telling me about the scrambler you had for comments. Like
disembowel.
Yes,
disemboweling.
Disembowel, yeah.
Teresa Nielsen Hayden, who was our comment moderator for some time, invented this idea of disemboweling. So if you're in a comment thread and somebody said, Chris Hardwick is a big, stupid weenie and I'm going to fuck his mom.
Yeah. You could, probably the nicest thing that's been said about me on a comment thread. You can fuck my mom if you want.
The moderator of that thread, we built a tool so that you could just hit a button and all the vowels would be removed from that post. So the fact that this person said something in the thread would still be preserved, which at the time people felt like it was a sort of important thing for free speech and censorship and yada yada. Not that I actually care. but the emotional sting would be removed.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't have the rest of the thread so influenced by somebody kind of taking a shit in it.
Not only that, but it also kind of it also puts a red mark on them for being a douchebag.
Yeah.
Where you're looking to go, oh, that guy probably said something shitty.
It's like the scarlet letter of douchebaggery. The fact that you've been disemboweled. So that's what disemboweling was.
Do you think there's any positive thing to take away from the negativity that happens on the website and I mean on the internet and the dismissive nature of, I mean, for me it's always the dismissiveness when people are just like, that fucking retarded, and you're like, God, really? Like, this person did make a thing, and, you know, you just dismiss it, like, not even going to give it a chance?
I don't know. I think maybe the takeaway is that human beings suck. I don't know. but then, that's not true at all, because every day, people on Boing Boing, I'll use Boing Boing as an example, not because I'm pimping it, because it's my nose is up it all day. but people will share wonderful things. They'll extend stories. They'll point me to sort of an extension of something that I didn't know about, or they'll share like life experiences that are incredible. You know, you'll post some random thing about, like, I don't know, some weird video of like seeing Iggy Pop in the 1970s, and somebody will say, I was there at that show, and let me tell you about what happened afterwards, and I will upload something to YouTube that I've saved on VHS in my basement for 10 years. That shit happens every day, and it's awesome, and it's the antidote to the cruelty, which is so prevalent.
And I guess it just, you just have to take the good with the bad. You just have to take the good with the bad, and in that instance,
take them all, and there you have
the facts of life.
Facts of life.
But I guess within a community, I just think that hatred motivates more people to speak up than positivity. Nah. You don't think so?
Well, hatred motivates me to respond, which is the lame thing.
Doesn't it suck the way I do?
If
this
somebody
thing,
says,
and I know
I,
how it
I
works.
Love this thing you did. I love you. I love boing boing. I love this idea that's floating around. Anything positive that like should stroke your ego and make you feel pretty inside.
Yeah.
I'm silent. But if somebody says you're an idiot or this is wrong or look at you fucked up the punctuation right there.
Yeah.
I'm like, ah!
I guess that's because, I think if you grew up nerdy, what you have is control over your mind.
Yeah.
You know, you have control over this sort of
speak for yourself.
I don't mean emotional control over your mind. I mean, it's just like, you know, whereas a classic jock type or, you know, someone who's not smart would just punch someone in the chest.
Mm.
A nerd's power is like, I'm going to knock you off your soapbox.
Actually, the square root of 64 isn't 5. Sorry.
So it's like, it's funny that we have this whole culture of nerd bullies now when nerds were never, ever, ever. Never meant to be bullies in my
maybe
opinion.
The jocks were right.
They might have been. They knew what would happen. They were trying to quell the impending nerd bully revolution, because being bullied by a nerd is way fucking worse
than a kick in the nuts.
Yes, because they'll get in your goddamn head and under your skin and they'll taunt you. And
I don't even have nuts, and I can tell you that it is definitely worse.
And they'll provide supporting evidence. Jocks don't provide supporting evidence. They just kick your throat just because.
Yes.
A nerd will write a dissertation and dismantle you.
With links.
With links.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I guess he's right. He's
like
proven this.
The guy that's been doing all the reviews of the Star Wars prequels. Mm. Just like, you know, like no one else would take the time to tear apart something. No one would take, you know. Like,
I watched them, too, and it's like an hour and a half of my life.
It makes those movies worth it to have that guy tear apart those movies.
Well, there's a joy in that. I feel like that's fair game.
Yeah.
Because I didn't make those movies.
It's true. You do revel in like just seeing people being torn apart.
Other people being torn apart.
But yeah. I think you're a perfect example of a great balance of what nerd culture should be. And I think that people don't know you should definitely follow you on Twitter.
Thank you, Chris.
It's your full name, right? Because I've been following you for so long. Or is it just X-E-N-I-J-A-R-D-I-N?
X-E-N-I-J-A-R-D-I-N.
Excellent. And do you have any, because I'm sure a lot of people look up to you. Do you have any?
Because I'm tall?
Yes, that too. But a lot of young nerds look up to you because, you know, you kind of live this glorious nerd fantasy life where you get to, you know, you get to do the things you want to do and you get to report about it and you
it's
get
really
to
good life.
Expose people to cool things. So, yeah. You know, are you asked the question like, how do I get involved in all that? What do you tell people?
You just do it, and you do it even when it becomes hard work or tedious or not glamorous, because a lot of times, like 99% of the time, it's still work.
Yeah.
You just do it. Just do it.
Do it.
Sponsored by Nike.
Do it. No, oh,
seriously,
my God,
like,
I wish.
You don't fucking wish we were. You don't wait for opportunities. You just get out there and create opportunities.
You kind of have to.
Yeah.
Especially now.
Everything I say right now, like everything that's coming out of my mouth sounds all motivating, but it's true, isn't it? I mean, you've done the same thing. That's sort of the story of your life, too, isn't it?
I don't know. I guess you just kind of find ways to work on stuff. I was talking to someone the other day, and they said we're working on something together. And she said, "Boy, it sure would be great to work, you know, to finally work on something that you know that we all really like." And I was like, "You know, I like everything I work on."
Yeah, maybe it's not something to look up to. Maybe it's not something that's a laudable character trait. Maybe it's a character flaw that. I have a low tolerance for things that are not awesome.
Yeah.
and that you as well, gentlemen, all have the same loathsome character flaw, and that is why we're here enjoying
ourselves. Yeah, well, in my head, it's like, what else are you going to do than do the things you want?
Yeah.
You know, like, I can't imagine doing anything else.
Well, you could work at a Genius Bar.
Cupcake. You know what?
Hell yeah. Way to bring it all to
don't
a screeching
halt.
Don't
get fired
halt.
Yet. I can't. Wait till I can start paying you before before you get fired.
Do you work at a Genius Bar?
No.
Oh.
Not anymore.
He did book earlier today.
No. Edit. Edit.
Yeah, my answer to this person who said, like, how are you able to do that was, I don't know. I think I just turn down stuff I don't want to do. I think I just turn down stuff I don't like.
Yeah. So it's a powerful move.
No is a very powerful word. And it's not, I'm not a power player by any means. I just, like you said, like, I have a low tolerance now for putting energy into things that I don't like. It's just like, why do that? I don't fucking have time. I don't have time. And I will, because what will happen is, I'll start to do something. You ever audition, or not audition, but you ever you interview for something, or you try to get a job, but you didn't really want it to begin with. Then they turn you down, and then you still beat yourself up about it.
Yes, all the time.
It's like, why get involved in that game at all?
Yeah,
because you're gonna get in. You're gonna try to do the best job that you can do, hopefully. And then, you know, if it's something you don't care about and something that just kind of flounders, then you're going to beat yourself up for something you hate.
I would say, actually, that one of the reasons that I'm so grateful to have a self-made platform, I think it's fair to call Boing Boing that.
Yes.
Is that I can't stand rejection. And I don't know how people, like working actors in Los Angeles, I don't know how they wake up every day and not kill themselves because of
Us used to drink a lot.
Yeah. It sucks so bad to have some talent and to have some reason for being alive in the world and to be told you're not right. Well, you are right for something, and maybe if you can create it.
That's, yeah, or you're not leading man enough. Like, that was one, yeah. I always loved hearing. Yeah, that's exactly why, you know, started the podcast, the website, the stand-up. Yeah. It's all stuff that I can control, and no matter what.
Just like the voices inside my mind.
That I'm working on. I am working on that. No, you shut up. No, you shut up. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm sorry you had to
be
present for that. I was just having a moment. Jenny, it was such a pleasure to have you on. I'm so glad we finally had you on.
It's an honor. I'm a huge fan.
I am a huge fan. Listen, we're gonna slobber all over each other because it's I too am a huge
more
fan.
Slurping.
No, it
there
is.
Was so much slobber that I had to slurp.
Because I'm like, I hang out with comics all the time. So when I, you know, like when I get to hang out with, you know, people like you and Adam Rogers, who's my friend from Wired, and, you know, and John Hodgman and people like that, that are like, oh, you guys are genuinely Merlin Mann. You guys are genuinely the smartest people I know.
It is true.
And it makes me happy to even just be standing kind of near that.
The smart particles do rub off.
Oh, I keep hoping that's true. I keep hoping that's true. Do you follow Merlin on Twitter?
I do.
At Hot Dogs Ladies.
I follow his work, and I'm a huge fan of his work.
He's not a comic. He may be one of the funniest people I know.
It's so true.
His mind works in such a way that I am jealous of it.
You know, surprisingly funny Twitterer, Steven Weber from Wings.
You, is that you enjoy true? Steven Weber?
Yeah, he's a really funny joke writer. You would have no idea that he was, but he is.
Well, let's all follow him too.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to check in with this Weber business, and then we'll bring that up on the next episode.
I think
this better be gold, Jonah Ray.
It is.
You've never led me astray before.
He also, yeah, he's very funny. Very funny.
All right. Well, thank you for coming in. I think the mic sounded good. I'm excited. I hope that this facility is older in the sense that it's all newfangled microphones, but it still records directly onto an audio CD.
All our coughs were silent.
All the coughs were silent. Some of them, but the sneezes got through.
Sorry. What happens if we ever run over 72 minutes?
What?
What happens if we ever run over 72 minutes?
I think these are 80.
Okay.
And these are 74, because that's the length of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony? Is that how?
The 10.5 Symphony.
Yes. That's how they decided the length of the CD. Like, the head of Sony was like, how long is Beethoven's Ninth Symphony? But in Japanese. And you said 10th? And they said it's 70.
I just made that up.
He said it's 74. They said it's 74 minutes. And he was like, make it so. Because he was a Star Trek fan.
Engage.
I made up half of that, but there is truth. There are truth nuggets in there as well. And isn't that what we hope this podcast provides?
They tasted good.
A lot of bullshit just with a little bit of truth nuggets. Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Enjoy
your burrito. That's something we say on the podcast.
Disfruten su burrito.
Whoa!
Disfrútense sus burritos.
Whoa! boner. Oh, and if you're listening in Canada, enjoy your poutine.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.